Hey, Will, like I normally do, I just want to take a moment to tell our listeners to make sure they hit us up on social, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, wherever you might see us. Make sure you're sending us something. Also, you can email us directly at appalachiameetsworld@gmail.com. If you get a moment, shoot us a line, give us some feedback.
Yeah, and wherever you listen to the podcast, make sure you subscribe to Appalachia Meets World. It just helps our podcast, but it also helps you know when we're releasing a new episode. Appalachia Meets World, a podcast about place and perspective, but always Appalachian.
And don't forget, Will, tonight's episode is powered by SOAR.
Shaping our Appalachian region. If you're an entrepreneur out there, especially in Eastern Kentucky, check them out.
Appalachia Meets World. We're back another week. It's Will.
And Neil.
Well, that was short. And Neil. What's up?
It's a tough day for little bro.
Yeah, what's happening today?
I'm about to go into this consult with the doc.
And the consult is about
not having any more children.
Oh. So you've made a decision.
I mean,
just a
is that a decision that a man makes?
I don't know.
I mean, I think this decision was kind of made for me.
It's a joint.
And I'm pretty sure it wasn't a joint decision. It's so bad that my wife had to ride with me just to make sure I actually go in the office.
So this is to finalize three kids, and we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, man. Couldn't be a sadder day in my world, but you know, I'm here. I'm here for the listeners. I'm just trying to maintain, just trying to make it through, you know.
Well, we appreciate that. We'll have a follow up next week.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good. Maybe I'll be in better spirits.
This episode's a little bit different. We're not going to do app news. We're not going to have app biz. We're going to have a throwback episode because it is March 1st. You know what March leads us into?
Oh yeah, baby. I was born in the bluegrass. March is time for madness.
March madness. So if you're born in the bluegrass, when you fill out your bracket, do you fill that with your head or your heart?
Heart always. Can't,
of course.
Can't get myself to ever overlook the cats. Just can't do it.
So the brackets aren't even out yet, but you got the cats in the final four, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Don't you? I mean, come on, man. It's March
of course
Madness.
I always fill it out with my heart. I wanted to ask you about that.
I mean, as a Wildcat fan, when you're writing those names in the bracket, I mean, and you come down to like cats and Arizona or cats in Houston, your mind is always telling you, oh, they gotta win this game. They're gonna win this game. So you just have to ride them in, man.
Have to. That's the thing. On any given day, they could win. On any given day, they could
lose.
But I'm not gonna write them down as a loser.
Heck no. Not in this house.
I wanted to bring it up because there's a young gentleman on the cats this year that is taking this NCAA by storm. His name is Reed Shepherd. I wanted to mention that he's an Eastern Kentucky boy representing the Appalachian pride. What can you say about Reed Shepherd?
Well, it's kind of unique, Will. I don't think I've ever spoke of an athlete that I have watched so many times, I guess, over the years. An athlete of his caliber anyway. You and I both have kind of known the kid maybe from birth, and just to see what he's accomplished this year specifically has just been absolutely amazing. So couldn't be more proud of a young, talented, up-and-coming phenom. How about you?
Oh, you know, at first of the year, we were asking whether he would get any playing time, and now we're pretty convinced he could be a lottery pick, and we're talking about is he going to go pro or not?
Absolutely. I mean, you and I have always thought that he had the ability to play at Kentucky specifically, but I think, I mean, he's even surpassed what I expected out of him this year. So he's definitely a pro in my book, which,
yeah,
you know, you can argue with me all you want, but I've said it for 4 years now.
No argument here. I feel like he's definitely elevated his game. And the thing that helps him, he's got a lot of dog in him. He's got some dog in him. And I know where he gets that dog from. And it's not from his dad. It's from his mom.
No, absolutely.
Stacy Shepard may be the best high school basketball player, not woman, basketball player I've ever seen on the court in person.
Yeah, Will, we've had this conversation in our family before. I remember when we were kids and we moved to London, Kentucky. I was obviously, as our podcasters know, I'm quite a bit younger than you. You can tell from my voice and my looks. But,
yeah, from your voice, it always sounds like a horse lodged in the esophagus.
But anyway, I can remember when we moved to London, our dad going to a girls' basketball game, and I thought it was weird. But anyway, he came back home, and the only thing he could say was, "I just saw the best basketball player I've ever seen in my life." And, of course, he was talking about Stacy Reed.
Yeah. I mean, if people – and I know people don't know, they show the Reeds on camera at the games all the time, but they always talk about what Jeff has done at UK.
You even said the Reeds. They're Shepherds now, but they were Reeds. It would be really weird if his name was Reed Reed. But anyway, I knew what you meant. Yeah, they do show him all the time, and people assume that his talent comes from his father, but we know the truth.
His father was not too shabby himself, I'm not going to lie. But
I
wanted to mention that because we've talked before about how important small-town we've talked about before how important athletics is to small towns, especially small towns at Appalachia. And to have a kid come from small town Appalachia, even though blue is in his blood, to do what he's done, how important that is to elevate a community there in Appalachia. You know, we saw Mac McClung just win the dunk competition from small town Appalachia. And now Reed Shepherd is doing things a little bit differently than most small town athletes. So what do you think about that in regards to just boosting the morale or, you know, just the things that he have accomplished, not only for himself, but representing London, Kentucky and Appalachia?
Yeah, I think it's awesome, and it proves what most of us from this area have wanted to believe, I guess, for a long time, that the skill level is you know, there's some good athletes and some good ballers that can do it on the big stage. Reed is rare. He's definitely elevated his play to a different level. But there are lots of talented people from Appalachia, and Reed is just another example of that, and just a tremendous representative for the region as a whole in many aspects, not just his ability to play basketball.
Yeah, we see it from a marketing potential, but it just elevates the region as a whole, especially the way he carries himself, how he's so humble, always puts his teammate first. He had a game-winning shot the other night, 32 points. Yet when they interviewed him after the game, all he wanted to talk about was his teammates and how well his teammates played and how well they put him in position to be a better performer. And it just comes back to that grit, that humble nature that Appalachians have, I think. He's a good kid. He has a good family, but he also comes from a good place. And I just wanted to mention that in regards to Reed.
Absolutely. Looking forward to what Reed does in the future for sure. Can't wait for the rest of March, getting an opportunity to watch him during March Madness on the biggest of stages.
Yep, definitely. And that's why we wanted to talk about it today and talk about, I'm glad you mentioned recruiting in Appalachia and how hard it is for the mountain kids to get recruited. So we want to have a little, do it a little bit different today, have a throwback episode. We're going to throw it back to another individual that came from the mountains that has been in the coaching ranks for quite a while. We had him on several years ago to talk about what he's done, but we're going to have a throwback to Richie Riley, your good friend and companion that we had on the show, now coaching at South Alabama.
Yeah, Richie's still doing big things in the basketball world, and great to get an opportunity to listen to him again. And speaking to him recently, I think there's even more to come with Richie in the near future, and grateful to have Coach Riley on our podcast again.
All right, leading into March Madness, let's do this throwback. You want to get Coach Riley's throwback episode on?
Let's do it. I always love to hear his coaching voice.
On the show tonight, we have Richie Riley. He is truly a rising star. Anything you read about him, that's what they say. I'm not just saying it, but he's a rising star among the Division I basketball head coaches. The last three seasons, he's been at the University of Southern Alabama, where he's the head coach. And when he was hired, he was only the 10th head coach of all time. He's been the finalist for the Ben Jobe Award, which is the top NCAA Division I minority coach in the country. He's also ranked just recently 16th on ESPN 40 under 40. He's had a pretty, to be as young as he is, he's had an incredible career. But prior to USA, he was at Nicholls for 2 years. Then he's had an assistant coaching stint at Clemson, University of Alabama at Birmingham, Eastern Kentucky University, Coastal Carolina. And then outside of D1, he was at Georgetown College, Hawaii Pacific, and Pikeville College. So that's a pretty lengthy resume for a young head coach that you are. But one thing that I did want to mention in all those assistant coaching stints, anything you read about Richie, it mentions and highlights his high level recruiting efforts. He's an amazing recruiter and has led all the teams that he's been on to winning records and turn programs around after being there. So Richie, we really appreciate you coming on the show. We just wanted to say that before we kick it off.
Yeah, it's great to be on. I appreciate you guys taking the time to bring me on. I grew up with Neil. He's a year older than me, and I grew up watching Will play, and used to look up to him. He was a running back, and loved watching him. And then obviously, Neil's had his success in football too. He was a pretty good hooper too.
And, yeah, it seems like
so. It's an honor to be on with you guys from London.
Doesn't seem like too long ago I was coaching you and Neil at the summer camp in London.
It was a lot. It was a lot longer than you're giving us credit for.
It only seems like two or three years ago.
Old, man.
Well, one thing we always kick the show off. We always ask every guest. This is a podcast really about place and perspective. As Appalachians, big on tradition, big on history. Our family is also big on tradition, and one tradition that we have, we go all out on appetizers over the holidays. Full table, just big spread of appetizers. We wanted to ask you, what's your favorite appetizer or favorite dish over the holidays? Do you have one?
Where I've lived has changed my perspective a lot on different things, and I've had a lot of different cultures that I've eaten. So I fell in love with any type of seafood because I've been down here in South Louisiana. Now I'm in Mobile, Alabama. So anything with seafood, I really love. You know, obviously we all have stuff that our family cooks and things like that, but I'm a lover of crawfish, any type of shrimp, you know, any seafood, because when you live down here, it's close to the water. You kind of just, it's made different down here. I think everywhere in the country, it makes things different. So I fell in love with that. So you can win me over with any type of seafood. It could be crab dip, anything you got.
Yeah. Believe it or not, my favorite seafood too during the holidays. And our Uncle Scott, who's the mayor in Pineville, Kentucky, he always brings shrimp cocktail. And, you know, we don't live close to the water. It might be at a Laurel Lake. I don't know, but it's pretty good. It's pretty good every year.
Well, one question I did want to ask you, Richie, just to kind of kick it off. I read on your bio, it talked about this past summer, you did a 360 mentoring coaching town hall. One of the things they talked about in there was overcoming challenges and stigmas. And you can talk about the 360 town hall, but to that point of overcoming challenges and stigma, you're a minority coach, and I'm assuming that's kind of what the focus was, but you're also from Appalachia. Is that a stigma that you've also encountered in the coaching circle, or just in college, or leaving Appalachia and all the places you've been?
Yeah, coming up through coaching, I think it's certainly, I was an outlier. It's very different. Now that I'm a head coach, not so much, but coming up, you know, a lot of guys have a major area they can pull from when it comes to recruiting, whether they're from Chicago or Baltimore or Los Angeles or wherever, where it's rich in talent. There's a lot of them. And I didn't have that. I grew up in London, Kentucky, and I wasn't a good player. You know, I was a walk-on at Eastern Kentucky for a year. I had to kind of find my own niche when it came to recruiting because I didn't have that background of just guys in my backyard, you know. So I've always worked really hard at building relationships all across the country. I think that's why we've had some success being able to get some really good players. The town hall thing we did was really cool. It was me and Shaka Smart, who's the head coach at Marquette, Jamie Christian from George Washington, and Mike Boynton from Oklahoma State. We were all on one panel. I think the other stigma about minority head coaches is that we're just recruiters. You know, that was something that we talked about on there a lot. Is, you know, whether you like it or you don't like it, that's the way the profession looks at people. And I said on there, some of the best tacticians in the country are black head coaches, period. And some of the best recruiters in the country are white guys. Like, it's not, and somehow in our profession, that's became a thing where people look at guys and they decide what their skill set is based on the color of their skin. And that, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with anything. And it's really, It's hard both ways. I talk about that a lot. It's hard. You know, one thing as a young coach, I always tried to do, I didn't demand from my boss because obviously he was my boss, but I really pushed the envelope to be able to coach, to be able to do scouts, to be able to be on the floor and really coach, because I wanted to be a head coach. And I knew if I got that label as just a recruiter, it was going to be that much harder. And I fought to be able to do that and to prove that I could do that. Where some guys don't have to prove that. They have to, you know, they got to prove that they can recruit, where I never had to prove that. So there are certainly stigmas. It's becoming better, though. I will say that. It's becoming a lot better. We saw a lot more minority head coaching hires this offseason, more than we've had ever since I've been coaching, I think ever in probably the history of college basketball. So it is trending in a much better direction. But, yeah, being from Appalachia and being a minority head coach are two things that, you know, coming up, I certainly had to not only be aware of that I had to fight that battle, but, you know, always proactive in trying to overcome that.
Yeah, it's something I was always curious about. And to the point of recruiting, you've recruited all over the country, obviously, and you're a talented recruiter, especially in D1. Do you ever recruit? I know you've coached at Pikeville College. You've coached in the mountains, but now that you're outside of Appalachia, do you ever even consider going back to Appalachia to recruit? Do you follow the talent? Is the talent not there? Like, from a recruiting perspective, do people even look in the mountains? Or is it just one of those things that we get overlooked for everything else? Athletics isn't just one more thing we get overlooked for.
No, we certainly do. We're certainly really aware of who can play when it comes to those regions of, you know, 12 through 16 in Kentucky. You know, that's kind of the mountains. So we're aware of those, and we do actively recruit those guys. I'm not allowed to talk about who we're recruiting on here, but we do have a few offers out in the mountains right now.
I know you've recruited at a lot of different locations. You've recruited while you were at Eastern Kentucky, while you were at Georgetown when you got your start. But would you say your approach is different when recruiting a kid inside Appalachia versus a kid that's, you know, maybe grown up in Florida or Colorado? I mean, how would you say those differ?
Yeah, I think it's really different. But I will say this. I think anywhere that you recruit, I think that's one of the things that's helped me be successful as a college basketball coach, and especially recruiting, is, you know, we recruit them all differently. It's based on figuring out who the kid is, where he comes from, his background, and really getting to know him. And a lot of times, you guys know this, being from there, and me too, a kid from the mountains of Kentucky is going to be have seen and been up brought up differently than a kid from Baltimore, Maryland. So yeah, I think so, you know, and it's all about building that relationship with them and, you know, what makes them tick, you know, and a kid, again, you got to find out their interest. A kid from the mountains of Kentucky, you may like to hunt and fish, and you may like to, you know, do things like that, versus, you know, a kid from somewhere else might not like that stuff. So yeah, I think your approach is a little bit different, but I think you still, for me anyway, we have the same approach when we go in regards to saying who we are and what our program's about and the things that can make you successful here and the things that we can help you be better at. I think all those things are the same. You know, we don't really, the standard is the standard for us. But yeah, forming that relationship, I think it's certainly different.
I'm kind of hearing we all, even though, you know, we may have different cultures, in the end, you know, we're all people. We're not all that different. To that point, you know, I've noticed you've kind of lost your accent a little bit. You talked about now you love seafood. Do you still connect to Appalachia? I know you have strong family ties in London still. I told Neil on previous episodes, once I got out of Appalachia, it just made me appreciate Appalachia even more. But do you still connect with Appalachia, and do you feel like you're still an Appalachian?
Yeah, I do. I'm a proud Kentuckian. I'm proud to be from London, Kentucky. I tell everybody that. No, most people haven't heard of London, Kentucky, obviously. I the way I explain it all the time is it's an hour down I-75, south of Lexington, and north of Knoxville, Tennessee. And
then you just talk about KFC.
Yeah, everybody does know that. It's funny. And I love that you said that about my accent, because my dudes, you know, that we recruit and I coach every day, when I allow them to, we do a little fun activity where they impersonate me, and they make me sound even more country. So they're always on about how I sound and some of the words I use.
I can't imagine if they were on here listening to us.
Yeah, you guys are still, you know, you sound a little bit, especially you sound a little bit more.
Well, you know, you're talking to the guy that never left. You know, we talked about this a couple episodes ago, but my favorite story to tell my kids is, you know, I was in the huddle in college telling guys the plays, and it took us a little extra time in the huddle because they were looking at me like, what? What'd you just say?
Didn't need an interpreter. Yeah, it is. It's a different, you know, it's a different way. And again, I've been all these places. Like, I lived in Cajun country for 2 years, and their accent and the words they use is so much different. And it's the same thing where we're from. I mean, you sound different every part of the world. And especially when you come with a country accent, it's just something about it. It's hard for people to understand.
I know you recruit kids all the time, but in your job, as a head coach now versus being an assistant coach, how many hours do you spend now just in recruiting kids compared to how many hours you spent, when you were at Coastal Carolina or when you were an assistant in Clemson and some of your other stops along the way? What kind of time do you spend now versus how much time you spent then?
Yeah, very similar. The thing we hang our hat on is I recruit every one of our priority guys like I'm an assistant. That's not because I don't trust my staff. I've got one of the best staffs in the country. They're really good. But that gives us an advantage that a lot of places don't. There's not many head coaches at this level that are going to spend the time recruiting guys like that, texting, calling, FaceTime all day. And that gives us an advantage because they get a real relationship with me, the head coach. And that's what I say all the time to them is you can have an incredible relationship with the assistant that's recruiting you. At the end of the day, there's only one dude that's going to be making the decisions. That's going to have the real plan for you. An assistant can tell you anything. I told him when I was an assistant, heck, I would say anything, you know, just to get them to come there. Sometimes as an assistant, I didn't know what that was going to be. But as a head coach, I do. You know, if you come in here and you work like you're supposed to work, you act like you're supposed to act, and you do everything that you're supposed to on your end, then I'm going to hold up my end. And you're going to be able to get out there and be an impact guy and have a great career here. So that's I put in a lot of time, a lot. That's one thing about coaching that makes it tough is it's a lot of time away from your family. It's a lot of time that you got to put in if you do it the right way. And then a lot of people say, talk about balance, and they'll talk about this and they'll talk about that. You choose what you want to do in life. If I wanted balance, I would have done something that I work 9 to 5 and I have the weekends off. I didn't choose that. So I pour everything that I have into this. And that's the only way I know how to, you know, recruit well, coach well, and win is I pour everything into it.
One thing I wanted to ask you, kind of curious of where this originated or if it's part of your identity, part of your culture, part of where you grew up. You know, you have the motto, burn the boat. Can you talk about that a little bit and tell us where that came from and if it came from your background, how you grew up, or as you've been coaching, did you develop it over time?
Yeah, burn the boat is something I'm passionate about. It's not just, you know, obviously it's on my hat here and it's on every single thing we have is burn the boats. And a lot of places they have a mantra, a slogan, whatever, especially programs, college basketball, football, whatever. And it's just signs or shirts. You know, for us, it's how I live and it's in the proof. And I tell every kid we recruit that. And I tell our guys that all the time. And it obviously came from Hernando Cortez, who in the Spanish Inquisition, I guess, went and they went to battle. And they got there and he didn't feel the confidence of his army. And they got off the boat. They were getting ready to go on land and go to war. And he had them burn the boats. And essentially what that meant is if they were coming home, it was going to be on the opposition's boat because it's conquer or be conquered. And it means no excuses. You got to find a way to be successful no matter what. You know, you don't have the safety net of making excuses, a safety net to fall back on. That's what we challenge our kids to do every day, every single day. Eliminate all excuses in your life, focus on the mission, and operate like you have no boat to go back on. You have to be successful. So there's three, I'll go real quick. There's three instances in my life where that happened. I heard Tony Robbins say this at Clemson. When I was at Clemson, I heard him. He's a motivational speaker. He gave the talk about Cortez and he gave the whole thing. And it really, I grabbed a hold of it because that's what my whole career's been. When I was 21 years old, I had volunteered at Georgetown College. The only job I could get at the time was Hawaii Pacific University. It was paying $8,000 a year. And I had to move all the way to Hawaii. It was a second assistant spot. So my parents thought I was crazy. So I was making $8,000. And I went out there and I ran a credit card up to $6,000 to survive. You know, and that was paying rent and everything else because it's so expensive out there. It paid off. And I ended up back at Pikeville. And then the second one was I left Pikeville and got to Arkansas Fort Smith, a Division II job, good Division II job. And I'd been there 2 weeks and Cliff Ellis from Coastal Carolina called. And he said, hey, are you interested in interviewing for my job, an assistant's job? And I didn't ever think I'd be a Division I assistant. So I said, yeah. So I went back to my boss at Fort Smith and I asked him, I'd been there 2 weeks. And he told me, yeah, if you go interview for the job, you better get it. So I thought about it for, you know, a few hours that night. The next morning, I turned in my letter of resignation, drove 15 hours to Conway, South Carolina, unemployed. So I burned my boat. I didn't have a job to go back on. So I had to be great for those 48 hours interviewing and got the job. And then the last one was when I was at Clemson. I wanted to be a head coach. So I was 33 years old and Nicholls State opened, which is top 5 worst budgets in all of Division I basketball. We had a $1,000 recruiting budget for all year. Everything was, and I was coming from Clemson where we flew on jets to recruit. I mean, there was anything that you wanted that you couldn't get. And my wife was not really thrilled about it. Nobody was real thrilled about it. And I took the job, and I took a $90,000 pay cut from being an ACC assistant to be a head coach at Nicholls State. And I bet on myself at a job that everybody said you couldn't win at. And we won a championship in year two. And then I got this job, a job that I've always really wanted. So that's how I live all the time.
Always bet on yourself. You know, that motto, that drive kind of just harkens back to the grit of Appalachia, of how you grew up. You know, you talked about your family. You have, and I mentioned before, you really have strong family ties in London, in Laurel County. And you mentioned this when you were talking there. You mentioned how your family wasn't too happy when you moved away to Hawaii. Like a lot of families in Appalachia, people don't always move away. And when they do, family tends to think that you're never coming back, or, you know, it may be a little different with coaching, but I think people in Appalachia always fear that when their kids move away, they're just never going to come back. How did your, you know, family, you mentioned it before, but how'd they take it when you moved away, when you said you were going to be a head coach and you may never come back? Is that something you've thought about? I'm sure that's something that they think about. And I know that they would probably love to have you back, but can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, they've been really supportive, but it's really hard because I don't get to see my family very often. It's very rare. My mother is really sick right now, and I don't get to be home very often because the job is so demanding. And so that it makes it hard in those moments. And it's made it hard over the years because I missed out on a lot of time with my family. But they've always been supportive. I've wanted to be a coach since I was a young child. Like, I've always really wanted to coach basketball. And I didn't know it would take me this far. My dream at one time was to win a state championship at Rupp Arena as a coach, to win a Kentucky high school basketball state championship. And once I got to Georgetown as a volunteer, I realized I wanted to coach college basketball. And I didn't know it would take, I didn't know it would go this far. Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard to be away from family. And it's something that a lot of days, you know, and maybe there's times that you regret it sometimes. And I do my best to still get home when I can. My family doesn't travel very much. Even before my mom started not doing too well from a health standpoint, they just, you know, it's like a lot of people in London, they just don't travel that much. They say they like to be home. So it really is hard, but I'm lucky. My parents and all my other family have been very supportive. They follow us like crazy. My first few years, my mom kept telling me that, there'd be a high school job open up around there. And I was an assistant like Clemson sometimes. And she's like, "Hey, this job open." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm probably on down the road a little bit too much to come back around there and take one of those."
Well, you mentioned Rupp Arena. According to KSR, you may just be in a different capacity in Rupp Arena one day.
Yeah, they have those articles. I'm from Kentucky. It's very flattering. And I, you know, obviously that's, you know, we just coach every single day as hard as we can and see what, you know, but it's a wild profession. I tell people this all the time. Coaching college basketball is a wild profession. You don't, 1 year can change your life for the good or the bad. And that's coaching any collegiate level, especially when you get to this level. There's such a demand on winning, and there's so much with social media and the fanfare and everything that goes into it. I mean, 1 year can change your life. So it's really humbling to be mentioned in certain articles like that. I've been fortunate. I've had a lot of really good coaches with me and a lot of real good players. Cause the thing you don't do as a coach is win very much without really good players.
Well, I'll tell you, Richie, you mentioned your family, you know, follows you, man. I follow you too. Appalachians love to see other Appalachians succeed. And you've definitely been successful. And I wish you all, you know, wish you all the luck.
I was just going to say, you know, I still live in London, unlike you two. So everywhere I go in London, it's I say something about, my friend Richie Riley. Oh yeah, I'm related to him. I he's my cousin. So just know that everybody in London is proud to know you and really proud of what you've accomplished so far in your coaching career. look forward to seeing what's next for you. But I just thought it was hilarious there a few minutes ago when you were talking about your family and you don't get to see them often. Well, all your cousins are watching, bro.
I got a lot of family in London.
Yeah, it got bigger.
They do. They do. They're all, everybody's grown now. They follow really closely, and we're down here by the beach too. I'll get some random calls from time to time. People stop in on their way to the beach and I'll give them a tour or some gear, you know, or whatever. But yeah, we want any of London to come down and see us when you can. I actually got a text from a man, Conrad Cessna, earlier today, and he had to burn the boat's hat on backwards down in Hilton Head with a Mike Bibby jersey on. And he sent it to me, and I sent him back a picture of me and Mike Bibby. I was with Mike Bibby at App State like a couple years ago. He loved it. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, we want all the people from good old London, Kentucky to stop in and see us play sometime.
One question we also ask all our guests, Richie, like we've said, you know, you've moved away from Appalachia, but where do you call home? And why do you consider it home? What's home to you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think as many places I've lived, home is kind of where my family is. My family, my kids, and my wife. And, you know, it's kind of became what it is. But London, Kentucky will still always be home because that's where I spent 18 years. And it shaped me to who I am, you know. Some of the good that comes out of being from London, Kentucky, and some of the bad, just like being from anywhere, shapes you to – the person that you are. I mean, I don't think, I say it a lot when we're coaching our kids, you know, there's 18 years before we get these guys. And those 18 years really shape you, who you are. And that's not saying that you're going to change a lot and you're going to mature and you're going to be around different things. And you'll certainly have change, but those 18 years that I spent growing up in London, I wouldn't have been able to do the things that I've been able to do and continue to try to do without those people that help mold me into, you know, the person I am.
I think that's a perfect way to end. You know, people at home always shape you into who you become. So hopefully us folk in Appalachia has played a role in shaping Richie into what he's become. And I know I shaped Will into all he's accomplished. So I always have to take a moment to thank myself for all his accomplishments. But.
And he thanks himself every single day. He likes to do that.
Hey, you know, one thing you did ask me on text that you said something about, and I thought about it. You asked why kids from Appalachia or that area come home and they don't necessarily stay, you know, and I thought about it. And, you know, I do think this, I think there's two things. I think when you're from Appalachia, where we're from, I think a lot of people end up living there. Like you live there, Neil. I think a lot of people, like when you look at people that you grew up with, a lot of them migrate back there, whether they ever left, you know, or not, whatever. They end up living there. And I think the other reason that kids from Appalachia there's like a stigma that people say they go off to wherever they go and a lot of them don't make it. I think the main thing is, the ones that don't make it are magnified more because there's so few of them. You know, recruiting, I recruit the whole country. And if in Chicago or DC or wherever, there's so many guys that come out of there. So the ones that go back, they're not under a microscope. In the 12th through 16th region, there may be one Division I athlete or two in a sport, especially basketball. So when they come back, I think it's magnified a lot more, if that makes sense. And yeah. I thought about that because it gets a bad rap, a guy saying they can't, you know, this guy's not going to make it. They always come back. I think there's just a microscope on them because there are so few. There's not a large number like you see across the country.
Yeah, and I meant to harbor on that. Just is the stigma in coaching – I hope that it's not this way, but the theory is from people inside Appalachia, the stigma in coaching is, I don't want to recruit a kid from Appalachia because he's never going to pan out. He's never going to make it. He's not going to be worth the time that I'm going to invest in him. Is that stigma real, or is that something that we just kind of think in Appalachia because what you're saying is true? It just magnified so much more.
For me, that's not a thing. But as coaches, we recruit a lot of different areas and we've all have our own experiences and stories. So is there some coaches that have been burned by that in the past that would think that? Probably. But not for me. I think the big stigma though, for me, since I've been gone from Kentucky, is where you're at recruiting, you know, like a kid from Appalachia. Okay. Like the thing is, will they come that far from home? And that's kind of the thing. Cause like Western Kentucky is a good example. Like if a kid is good enough for us, then, you know, Western Kentucky's probably might be recruiting it. Would they go there or here? You know what I mean? And I think that's a real thing. I think trying to figure that out, if they're willing to go that far away from home.
Appreciate you, man. We won't keep you all night.
I enjoyed it, boys.
I'm up in the mountains again. I'm getting lighter. The air's getting thin. Now I'm facing down with a grin. I've been in the city too long. Sidewalks and buildings and singing sad songs. Now I'm back up where I belong, in the mountains.